Hello and welcome to another edition of TV Cream's What We Just Watched. My name is Ian.
And my name is Graham.
And for this special edition, we have both chosen programmes from the year 1997.
But that aside, neither of us have any information about the show the other person has brought along with them today.
That's right. Let's get straight on with it. Graham, I think you're going to go first.
I am. Ian, this is a bit different from normal in that you're told instantly, really, what it is you're watching. There's no kind of guess the thing.
Okay, is there a big caption or is there a voice?
Well, you'll see.
There's no element of guesswork.
There's no element of guesswork. Okay. I think this section is going to be more just about capturing your response to the revelations that are about to hit you.
Crikey. Okay.
Okay.
So, I'm ready.
Here we go. What are you saying?
It's a countdown to the launch of Channel 5.
It's 6 o'clock on Sunday, March the 30th, and this is 5.
Ah, yes. Well, I remember this very, very well. Perhaps we'll talk about more later, but I don't know what we're about to see, because I remember the very first thing that Channel 5 showed was a Spice Girls promotional song. Oh, that's what we're getting. Oh.
Okay, so we're going to watch this promotional start to Channel 5, and then the first half hour of Channel 5 that followed it, and then we will come back with you.
Oh, what a joy, Graham.
For a fun post-mortem. We've just watched the first 30 minutes from the opening night of Channel 5, which began at 6 p.m. on Easter Sunday, 30th of March 1997, with a Spice Girls reworking of Manfred Mann's 5-4-3-2-1, recorded exclusively for the channel. And within that song, they laid out a manifesto for Channel 5, Ian. How do you feel 20 years on those promises were delivered?
Tune in now for a new generation. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Tune in now for a new generation.
Well, already, already things are off to a bad start.
It's quite a diffuse promise, isn't it?
Well,
is it a new generation of personalities, or is it a new
generation of television sets, which have had to be retuned for this occasion?
Actually, tune in is quite a good point, isn't it, considering the kind of brouhaha and problems in retuning, yes, which we'll get to later because it's mentioned in the opening night.
But already, my issue is, and this is probably going to be a recurring theme,
yes,
is how they have chosen to define themselves more through what they are not,
yes,
rather than what they are. And they're already starting by trying to react against something else.
Okay.
Which I think is, you're on shaky ground if you're not really promoting something as a reason to do something.
Okay,
as a reason to not do something.
The second promise laid out by the Spice Girls is
guaranteed to be the new sensation. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, that's just a load of nonsense.
So
it just means nothing.
But it's that's a guarantee. Do you feel that?
Oh, do you mean
it's guaranteed? This is
Can I claim that back, that guarantee? Is it, do I get my money back
for not
if
having
I feel it hasn't been
a new sensation?
Well, how do you measure what is and what isn't a new sensation?
Those are the promises in the first verse.
Yes.
And
they're very broad, aren't they?
They're very broad, but also the rhyming, generation, sensation, these are multi-syllable rhymes that they're laying up. Yes. My point is that when we then get to the second verse,
okay,
wicked shows for you to see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Suddenly the rhyming is become very simplistic, isn't it? They just see, be...
And also, well, I mean, I suppose anything which has the word wicked in it is... Well, not only does it date it, but it dates it as something from 1987, not 1997.
So, but that promise, wicked shows for you to see. Do you think broadly Channel 5...
No.
Okay.
Tunes and starting movies free. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, tunes is a problem.
No, tunes is sports, yes, broadly, yes, could agree with that. Movies free. Movies free.
Tunes, well, that's fair enough, because they did try and position themselves as being...
As a movie channel and a sport.
Yeah.
Tunes, did it have...
What does that mean?
No.
I don't think they had a music show or a pop show.
No.
So, well, what are they promising there? Tunes.
Tunes. within a tune, so one could say that they've... They're delivering
as
they're making the promise there. And then...
On the TV that you've ever wanted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, that's a very bold claim.
But who says it?
Spice Girls. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That bit annoys me because they don't...
They've dropped the...
They are the Spice
articles.
Girls.
Yes.
And they would still scan. That wouldn't
Spice
be a problem.
Spice Girls.
Who says it? The Spice Girls.
It would work, yeah.
And they do say, take it from us.
Take it from us. It's girl power. Take it from us. It's a power of five.
Well, now, at the time, you feel that they should be held accountable for this in that case? And are they accountable figures?
Well, they've obviously been...
Take it from us, they say. Address that point,
They've clearly been happy to be co-opted into the Channel 5 launch. They were all over the place. They were on posters, weren't they, on the sides of buses. But then they lent themselves to all sorts of marketing stuff at the time, didn't they? So it was hardly unique.
But...
Are you saying that... Should they be...
20 years on now, there should be a kind of...
There should be a reckoning.
Yes, there should be some sort of parliamentary...
panel should be convened.
Yes.
And they should be...
They should all come in. And they should be made to, particularly the tunes, Sporty Spice, there should be... What do you call those things when there is a hearing? What's the right
inquiry,
phrase?
A public
there should
inquiry.
Be a public inquiry where they're saying, tunes,
please,
what did you mean, Sporty
and
Spice?
And please, can you quantify the wickedness, the amount of wickedness that you have delivered...
We've
over
given
the
you
last 20
a
20-year
period. So if you were David Elstein, would you concede, though, that you would have been thinking, oh, Spice Girls, yeah, that's going to be a great way
Oh, absolutely.
To...
Yeah. I don't think that it reflects badly on them, on Channel 5, for seeking to hire and then putting them right up on the screen because, they were the biggest pop act at the time, the biggest act in the world, possibly, in 1997.
And the idea of reworking the Manfred Mann track... Again, it's a reasonable idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how poor the lyrics are and so on, but it might be a bit obvious, but I suppose it would have been, it worked at the time.
I suppose, actually, you're a bit of a hostage fortune when you're deciding that you're going to reversion that to reflect the channel launch. They should maybe have just sung the song as was.
The
that probably would
song.
Have that would have been less toe curling, wouldn't it, don't you think?
Actually, yeah, because what they've done is they've taken a good idea, which is to rework the song or to use the song.
Yeah.
But then they've sort of overworked it. They've pushed it a little bit too far.
Yeah.
By not leaving it well alone.
Yes.
And saying, well, no, let's do something else to it. Let's meddle with it a bit more. And that's made it a rather uncomfortable.
So by the time they get to the second verse, the whole thing is starting to sag,
isn't
it?
It's tottering.
There's not enough.
Doesn't last. This just go on for quite a while. It could have just been 30 seconds. My biggest issue with this is that it's horribly dated. And the fact that they were co-opted into this. I mean, the launch of a new channel should be a moment for the ages. It's a piece
that's
of history.
What your problem is in terms of...
Yeah,
I was thinking, well,
it
of course
now,
it's dated, it's 20 years old.
No,
but you're feeling it should be made to sustain.
It should become ageless.
Yeah.
It should be something which in decades to come,
like
20 years on,
you
can watch it back and be quite awed by it, maybe moved by it.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be able to say to you, welcome to Channel 4.
The Channel 4 launch is exciting to watch now, even though there's no big names and faces in
the
part.
True, but isn't the Channel 4 launch, wasn't it at the time considered quite underwhelming?
And it probably worked in its favour, didn't it, do you think? Because you just had the voice of Paul Coyer, and then you had a full-length
countdown
version of the theme set to all these exciting images and faces and things, and it was cut quite tightly. It then went into an episode of Countdown, but that's beside the point, really. What you want is to come up with an opening few minutes which are going to imprint themselves not just at the time but onwards into the future, and I think that just doesn't work with
and
this.
Actually, I think you're right, because you never see this footage back, because Channel 5 wouldn't air it now because it does look a bit crap.
Well, it's hideous. The Channel 4 logo is one that can survive onwards, and it can resurface from time to time. And it looks and feels... it's a period piece, but it still has a resonance.
The Channel 5 one actually is very anodyne, isn't it?
What would the resonance be now if you see any of this branding? I wonder if anyone would actually even recognise it.
Thank you, the fabulous Spice Girls, for recording that song exclusively for us. And thank you for joining us on this historic occasion.
Hello, yes, this is Five, and she's Julia Bradbury.
And he's Tim Vine.
What's your feeling about this notion of opening up a new channel? And this, so it's called This Is Five, this opening half hour.
That's the name of this, it has its own name, didn't it, this particular
programme?
Yeah, This
Is Five, yeah. And they're opening up a channel with having two people stood on camera, on green screen, chatting about what's going to be on the channel for 30 minutes. That seems a profoundly bad idea,
yes,
isn't it?
Well, if you'd have tuned in for the first 2 minutes to see the Spice Girls, I doubt you'd have made it for another 2 minutes, because what you get, first of all, as you say, is the two of them in front of a non-specific set of images, like blurred colours.
Mm.
And the very first thing that they talk about is scheduling.
Here we are, the modern alternative to...
Well, the modern alternative to old-style TV channels that expect you to fit in with their schedules.
Because this is Five, where our schedules are designed to fit in with your life.
You're quite right. It's about a minute in. And they're already using these kind of... these phrases that
buzzwords.
Feels like they were written in the manifesto to get the channel launched.
Yes.
And what, you know, what the stuff that was sent to... Would it have been the IBA at that point, or the ITC? Anyway, when they were looking to secure
ITC.
The licence. So they use phrases like the modern alternative.
Oh, it's awful.
Alternative to what?
Yeah.
And this idea, it's kind of arriving, positing the idea that actually there's a big problem in analogue telly. We're here to solve it.
Well, we've got the latest news on the hour, every hour.
Except during movies, because we don't have that annoying habit of interrupting the plot halfway through with half an hour of news, so you forget what you were watching in the first place.
I don't think anyone else in the country would have said... would have been chatting to their family and friends, oh, there's such a problem with television today.
I
really hope a new channel comes along and it's not just an alternative, but it's a modern alternative.
Ian, why are you looking so grumpy over your cornflakes this morning? Well, Mother, it's because I want news on the hour.
I want a modern alternative.
But I want, you know, I want genre programmes at the same time every weeknight.
I want what, if only I could have a stripped schedule.
Yes.
Why, oh, why is there not a stripped schedule on national television?
It feels really achingly redundant from the off. How close this channel launch was to television becoming something that people can schedule for themselves anyway. So that whole thing feels an utterly redundant premise, doesn't it?
I think, yeah, but to be fair to them, I don't think they or anyone would have realised just how quickly that change was going to come.
No, I agree, yeah.
So I don't think we can hold that against them. But what we can accuse them of is a terrible, nauseating obsession with all this jargon.
And they're on at the time you want them on, the same time every weekday night. In the trade, this is known as a stripped programme schedule.
And this was the sort of stuff which they were putting in newspaper adverts as well.
Mm.
This notion that this is something to be proud of and to boast about, the fact that it's the same stuff on every night.
It also says something about the kind of programming that they have, in that what's most marketable about it is when it's on, not what it is.
Yes, exactly.
So it's this idea that actually it's kind of convenience TV. That's what they're selling. And all the idea then turns into, as if you start thinking of convenience food. It's things that it's fine, it's going to be there. It's not a treat.
Yeah, it's the availability of it, not the quality of it. It's enough for them to say, oh, there's going to be some entertainment on every night. There's going to be a talk show on every night, a film every night, and soap every night, and some news. Doesn't matter what they are, the merits of each of the individual things. It's just enough that they're there.
Mm.
And that's all that we have to do. And that's enough for you. And that's, I suppose, they consider that to be this modern alternative that they keep going on about. One, which, and I'm sure you were going to talk about this, they hope we're going to enjoy.
There's always that phrase, yeah.
They say this several times.
Loads of programmes we hope you'll like.
We hope you'll enjoy our programmes. We hope you've liked watching. Well, don't say that. Just say you're going to enjoy it. You will enjoy it. Don't introduce some element of doubt or equivocation into it.
It feels like a corporate presentation in a way, whereby at one point Tim turns to Julia and says something like...
Sport, news, drama, entertainment, kid stuff, comedy.
And it doesn't stop there.
This kind of totting up of all these things that we've told you about. Let's recap now. And it's so
It does
lumpy.
Feel horribly like a PowerPoint presentation
yeah.
in front of a boardroom or at a conference. And they no thought has been, well, that would explain the jargon as well. No thought has been given to anyone else looking in who may not be familiar with any of this terminology and who just want to know why they should be watching this channel.
Mm. They talk about Channel 5 News. So they cut to Kirsty Young. Now, there are mixed feelings here because, again, Kirsty comes in from the point of view that they are solving a problem.
What's different about Channel 5 News is that we've addressed a lot of the problems that many news programmes haven't been facing up to for years.
And again, it's a problem that no one has felt has existed. She does talk about young viewers not watching the news. I mean, it was ever thus. That will always be
it's
the
not
case.
A new thing.
And it's a folly to try and address that, really. But there are other ideas that somehow news is inconvenient. Certain things that they do here were proven to be a big success, namely making the newsroom the studio. Now, that is a profound difference, isn't it? And you still see that now.
Yeah, and to give them credit, this is one way they did change the way British television looks and how it works, and probably for the better, although I think their reasons for doing it were flawed. And the whole argument about, we know what's right about the news and everything else is wrong, it's an incredibly pompous thing for them to say.
Yeah.
And again, they define their news coverage more by what it isn't going to be than what it is, which I always think is a problem, as I've said before. Mm. And as a side point, anything where they brand logos and captions without capital letters.
Yes, which the Channel 5 style guide.
And so we see, this is the first point in this programme where we see all the news branding and the studio and everything has no capital letters.
Yeah.
And personally,
it's hideous.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
And the talking point at the time was that Kirsty read the news standing up,
yes.
And which now is... That's standard.
Well, except it's not.
We're certainly on the 10 o'clock news in the BBC.
Well, they begin by standing up. Then they move to a desk.
Okay, that's true. I will concede that. But I think what strikes me is that they make these innovations, which do prove to be the correct instinct, but they never reap the rewards of it themselves. So what happens is other channels see it,
well, then
start
do it,
doing
and do
it,
it better.
And do it better. It's never made Channel 5 News ever feel like it's at the centre of public discussion.
It's a legacy which is inarguable, the way it did change. But I'm just thinking now of the other faces that we see during this news
segment. See Scott Chisholm.
News, by its very nature, is exciting. It's new, it's true, it's different, it's dynamic, it's always changing.
So, formerly of Sky, and I'm trying to work out where he was in his career, whether he had come from... talk radio as well, which seems to, I feel, has a kind of a synergy with Channel 5, this sort of popular intelligence. But Scott Chisholm...
What happened to him?
Well, what precisely? There's another 90s heavy-set sort of gentleman who will appear later in our discussion, who is similar to Scott Chisholm, just never made it out of that decade. It kind of has since vanished. Scott Chisholm... You know, I think he came in as a kind of sort of a two-fisted news anchor who would, you know,
two-fisted?
Yes,
what
kind of
mean?
Known for being a bit bullish and
like it. Oh,
sort
right,
of beat
okay.
up his guests a little bit.
But they've put him on the breakfast.
I know.
Show. I don't remember there ever being a proper breakfast show on Channel 5.
No.
I think they've perhaps this was a hang-up from when they were perhaps were aspiring towards having a proper breakfast program. But in the end, they just went for a mixture of. Separate news bulletins and children's programmes.
The opening night of Channel 5 is strange as well in that they talk about their stranded schedule that's going to work for us, and they open with a night of atypical programming.
Yeah.
So a lot of the shows that they're flagging have to have these kind of two TX lines saying tonight at blah blah and then for the rest of the week on at blah blah. One of the problems then that night is they have their own original drama, Beyond Fear.
Channel 5 is also committed to bringing you the very best in drama. Stories like the real-life ordeal of Stephanie Slater, the Birmingham estate agent kidnapped by murderer Michael Sands.
It's Stephanie! She's home!
Watching this, and it might be that they've just put some shocking music on the trail, it seems horribly mawkish.
I was terrified. I was slowly going to starve to death and no one would find me.
And sentimental. And I certainly recall when I watched that drama, it didn't feel that. The time it felt quite gritty.
Did you watch it?
And restrained. I watched it, yeah.
Oh. The bit that we saw just then looked to me like it was could have been a spoof from an episode of KYTV.
Yeah.
Of, and in fact, the whole thing actually feels very much like a KYTV extended sketch about coming up on in our new season of KYTV in the autumn. Because every type of programme we see on this Channel 5 teaser... has the air of, of a pastiche, of a spoof, be it the incidental music, be it the dialogue, some of the acting, which is atrocious, and all, just the way it's all put together. Now, I don't know how much of that is a retrospective thing and how everything from the 90s now feels like it's either a KYTV or a Chris Morris
I think
spoof.
That's true, because I think the 90s is at its lowest ebb retrospectively at the moment, isn't it? Or this period, the kind
of... As, in, when we're
20
talking
years
now.
Ago, yes. I think oh, so. Yes. In the way that I think we're, you know, 87
are,
is now...
Up,
that's, yes.
But then mid-90s
but
yes, are on the down.
Yeah, if they're on that kind of continuum. And when we come together to do this in another 10 years' time, probably it would maybe not seem so horrid.
What, the 1997?
Yes, but all the stylistic choices... At the moment, look hideous.
They're completely...
The colour schemes...
They're all out of favour at the minute.
Lots of lowercase letters, as you said, logos on oval egg shapes.
Oh, dear.
You know,
yes.
These kind of things. Yes. Horrendous. They take their time, in my opinion, to get round to talking about Family Affairs, which is... It's arguably the strongest prospect they have for a new channel, because... New soap, daily soap, that's a strong lure, isn't it? That's the sort
yes,
of thing that could potentially... That's your whole anchor for your schedule.
But I was thinking as we were watching that, it's interesting that nowadays, if you were trying to launch a new channel, I don't think a soap opera would be considered important now. I mean, something like Sky Atlantic or something. Well, I suppose that's a different kind
it's
of proposition, really, isn't it?
Well,
but if you were... Just think if you were trying to launch
but
a
no
new
one,
TV channel.
I think there's
soaps are not... Don't have that importance
but
anymore.
But there's a flaw in that argument in that, so for example, it's a flaw that Sky One now, I think, suffers from, in that no one now would launch a general entertainment all-ages channel. Now, if you're launching a channel, it would be with a specific
thing.
Remit.
Okay, yes.
So that's the difficulty.
What are the big names in Family Affairs?
There aren't really any big names. Yes. There's the guy who played Billy Walker in Corrie. He's in it as the dad. No, well, it's the granddad. There's whoever played Sue in Brookside, Pat from Brookside. He pops along, but I don't mind that. I think that isn't it distracting to have a big name in a soap?
No, not at all.
Don't you think that's a barrier to getting to know the characters?
No. If there was a new soap launched and I was looking down the cast and I saw that among the people who would be appearing in it. Were such names as...
Ooh. As who? Now let's have some names that would make you tune into this new soap.
To a new soap opera.
Who do you want to see?
Well, now let's think.
In her first dramatic role, Gloria Hunniford.
May I just say hello and welcome to the programme?
The interesting point is when we were watching this, I paused it just as they got to the Family Affairs and said to you, now, here's a new soap. Who do you think they're going to pop up on screen to come and talk about the soap? And that's why we started talking about the fact that there kind of isn't really... an obvious spokesperson. So what they do... Well, Ian, do you want to advise the listeners who they bring on?
Instead of seeing one of the big faces of the cast, instead we see executive producer Mal Young.
The Hart family, combination of classes, everything from Angus, the retired miner, through to Duncan, the 24-year-old entrepreneurial guy.
And again, this feels, again, as if this whole programme is being directed towards the ITC, to say.
Yes,
you know, look at the behind-the-scenes talent. Yeah.
Look who this is.
And he was, I mean, this was his next job after leaving Brookside, so he was yes. fresh off from being co-executive producer with Phil Redmond on Brookside.
Oh, was that the correct
yes, they were co-executive
terminology.
Producers. And he talks
this was
us
his first
through...
big thing then, wasn't it?
It feels
as a solo
weird
thing.
That... So he has no... The public aren't really going to recognise who he is. So therefore, why not just get one of the equally unrecognisable cast members to
yes.
come on and say, I play mum in this new thing.
Yes.
She's my daughter. He's my... And we're going to get up to a lot of bother.
Well, and they should do it in character, like they did before EastEnders launched.
That would have been good.
Yes.
The EastEnders are coming to BBC One.
Salaam alaikum. I'm Naima.
My husband Saeed and I live upstairs.
And do you remember how he describes, so there's the kind of the family affair setup is mum, dad, two daughters, one who's bookish, one who's a bit of a raver. Now, do you remember how Mal describes young Mal?
Well, conveniently enough for the station, this character is described by Mal as...
Who's our Spice Girl.
Our very own Spice Girl, yes, that's right. Of course, because every soap had to have a Spice Girl character around this time. And here is one front and centre in Family Affairs.
And described thusly. It's not even left to the viewer to make that.
I don't think is her name even mentioned. She's just
No,
the
she's
Spice
called
Girl.
Mel. They do mention
oh,
Mel.
Oh, like she's one of the Spice Girls. So yeah, she shares a name with the Spice Girl.
She does. I hadn't thought of that. And am I right in thinking that you didn't watch Family Affairs?
No, never.
I did.
I think you enjoyed it, didn't you?
I think I watched the first maybe 8 months, and it was quite
really?
A... Yeah, it was... It felt modern and mainstream, but it was upbeat.
Did you feel, oh, I hope I'm going to enjoy this?
Well, because, Ian, it was scheduled at a time that worked for me. It wasn't presenting a problem in my life, so just, that I would watch
it.
It
was the same time every night, so you knew when to find it.
Let's move on from Family Affairs. This is one of the things where I was saying that they try and propagate these lists of things that they've got to show how abundant and how full of excitement the new channel is. So when they talk about films, for example, we notice that you see clips of Highlander about six times in the one package.
Yes.
So they talk about that, how they've
scoured the world for the best in action, adventure and romance.
And it's things like...
They've got Xena.
Xena, Warrior, which was a good signing. Hercules.
Yeah, the list starts
pretty
promisingly.
Well, yeah. Those two shows probably would have been on BBC Two in the Star Trek The Next Generation slot if Channel 5 hadn't got them. So decent acquisitions.
Yes. But then,
Melrose Place, which is, they get some mileage out of it being a bit crap.
Yeah, it did well for them, didn't it?
It did well for them.
And Sunset Beach. Yes.
And then, very quickly, we're looking at, I'm having to consult my notes to even remember the name, Halifax FP. They've scoured the globe.
That's the sort of name that you
And they've come back with Halifax FP.
If you were trying to think up the name, like a placeholder name.
A generic.
For a generic imported drama, Halifax FP.
There is also this thing where it just says the Comedy Store, and you actually get no sense of what this show is.
My auntie, Marge, has been ill for so long. We've changed her name to I Can't Believe She's Not Better.
We see Milton Jones doing some stand-up. Then there's some black and white footage of Jack D reminiscing.
I never got round to it, and I was living with an actress who went up to Edinburgh.
And it's this whole kind of rarefied atmosphere, as if, wow, we're
goodness
inside
me.
The comedy
Who
store.
Thought, yes.
Ian, we're here.
We're in
the comedy store.
Loudly, yeah.
Let's venerate this place. But in passing, there is also just some little bits from a sketch show called We Know Where You Live.
I'm glad we've got this time together, darling. I've been wanting to have a little chat with you, Kirsty. I'm afraid I've got some bad news. It's about your husband.
Keith, Mummy?
Yes. Now, this is going to break your heart, Poppet, but I'm afraid we've had to have him destroyed.
Which, latterly, is of interest because Simon Pegg was in that, Sanjeev Bhaskar, Amanda Holden.
Yeah, fair enough, yes.
Although, I don't remember the show at all. I don't even remember the name, that name.
They do either.
And there's the trail that Jack Doherty is coming up.
Hello and welcome to the Jack Doherty Show. Yes, it's still called that, despite pleas from Channel 5 to rename it Jack on the Box.
Opening night guests are...
The Spice Girls. Who'd have thought?
Well, remember, Spice Girls. Not the Spice Girls.
Sorry, Spice Girls and Roger Moore. Now, that was one of the few things that I watched. I didn't watch much of the opening night, but
Because of Roger Moore?
Yeah.
Right. And presumably he wasn't plugging anything.
No. He was on purely because he was Roger Moore.
Yeah, which is sound.
Yeah, and it was sensible. Yeah, you can see, oh, great, for Roger Moore. Although it does call to mind...
Aha, Mr. Bond!
The set, oh my word, the set.
Oh, well, we see a glimpse
set
of it in this trail.
And it's such a rip-off of Letterman.
It's completely, even down to, as you pointed out, the kind of...
A lattice work
thing. So it looks like one of those sort of fold-away things you'd have in a conservatory to kind of keep the sunlight out, to divide the room, an ersatz room divider.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a... And the house band, which he said were to his
just
right.
Just right, exactly the same as Letterman. And, of course, as always the case with British...
We don't want that.
Shows, we don't want to see... We can seek out the originals. Why have we not got something a bit new and something which is the modern alternative?
Mm.
But it's not alternative. I mean, it's not even modern.
Mm.
And of course, the show was a massive flop. Mm. And famously was sequentially reduced back from 5 nights to 4 to 3 to 2 to 1 before it was dropped.
Has anybody seen my show?
The ad break, the first ever ad on Channel 5. It's kind of, is it a pub trivia question? No one cares really, do they? But it was from...
it would be a good trivia question because, as with a number of the other adverts during this commercial break, it has been chosen for its associations with the name, with the number 5. And it is...
Share the fantasy, Chanel number 5.
Have you forgotten?
No, I was keen up for us to hear a little bit of it.
Oh, I see. And there's a few little stunt ads in there. There's a nice one from Kellogg's.
That's a really nice one where we see the first...
Independent television ad.
Hello, and welcome to Independent Television.
Who do you know that wouldn't like Kellogg's cornflakes?
And then something from the early 80s, around about the time of the Channel 4 launch.
Although, rather egregiously, that they've mocked up the This Is Channel 4.
It's a pleasure to be able to say, welcome to Channel 4.
Because there's no Paul Coyer, they've got their own voice man.
A sound alike.
And then actually they mock up their own Channel 5, which again has no bearing on what Channel 5 actually
is. This is 5.
However, it's a nice idea. And there's this weird thing with Thompson Holidays where they're advertising themselves in the fact that they have their customers give full and frank reviews of the holidays they've been on.
Which they make public then as well.
Which they make public. And they illustrate this in the advert by having holidaymakers in a swimming pool holding up scorecards a la Strictly, saying 9, 7, whatever. Yeah. Then, so you think, okay, great. We have a few other ads. Then it comes back to Thompson and they say, we want to welcome Channel 5. And they have all these holidaymakers holding up number 5.
Yes.
Which looks like they're saying, well, it's mediocre
average.
Night, isn't it?
We give it 5 out of 10.
We then return to, I wonder how long the recording session was for Tim and Julia for this thing.
Oh, God.
Because they must have been thinking, oh, we've just been yakking and yakking and yakking and yakking.
It has the feel of something that's been edited down from hours of tape.
And this is, it's again, here is another phrase that shouldn't be uttered on the launch night of a channel.
But
they're talking possibly ever aloud, and it's going to be uttered again, and then it will never be uttered after this utterance.
Go on.
Where Julia's talking about this task that Channel 5 had to do, which sounds, the whole thing now, it sounds almost unbelievable. They had to go and retune everyone's video recorders.
Every single one in the
what
country.
A massive folly that was. But they had to do this. And Julia says
it's the biggest civilian operation since Britain was converted to natural gas.
Now, what a luminescent phrase that is. You think, wow, I'm really leaning in now. The biggest British civilian operation, Ian. Wow, we lived through these times.
I thought she was going to say since D-Day or something like that. Oh, dear. I mean, whoever thought up that particular segment?
But they try and make a virtue of the fact that they've had this massive...
No-one's interested.
No-one's interested. And then they have chat from the engineers.
I mean, I've never had so many cups of tea and cake. So lock the door behind you. You know you're not going to get back out without a tea and a scone.
This is just a logistical operation. It's got nothing to do with it. And also, it's done. It's finished.
But this is kind of vanity that as well, that they've already been part of our lives. And that I want to hear from these engineers because, you know, they've become characters to me. They've become friends to me.
Well, you're lucky then because we hear not one, not two, but three stories from these... Well, I'm afraid they're all rather dour, uncharismatic individuals.
Made to stand in the rain.
They're always standing in the rain, these little clips.
And they have these
in the rain.
Ensembles of sort of four of them, but one will be talking to camera. But in every ensemble, as you spotted, one has been placed looking away.
It's told to look away. Don't look at the camera. Don't even look like you're paying attention.
Please don't acknowledge that you're part of this tableau. And then we get to sport.
Now then, here's a word to conjure with.
England.
And another.
England.
Channel 5 aims to bring you the very best in sport.
And this I find very strange because visually this section is massively undernourished.
Well, they don't have any footage, that's why.
They don't even have any branding or, you know, for their sports shows or anything. So
I think this was the most unprepared element of the launch.
But sport was their biggest selling point because they had this big England match coming up.
Just one, yes.
Just the one, but it was still, that was the thing. So you would sort of think they would have thrown everything behind this. But we have Gail McKenna, former Page 3 model.
On Saturday, May the 31st, England's footballers travel to Poland for a vital World Cup clash.
And now she's their kind of their sports anchor. So she stood in front of the green screen, and it's a kind of indeterminate sort of moving fabric
colour wash
background. Then she cuts to Tricia Adudu, and she stood unnaturally close to England rugby captain Phil de Glanville in front of another makeshift backdrop. And this is kind of exchange, isn't it, where she asks him something and he replies and she's like,
Phil, how's your preparations going for Argentina?
Oh, we're looking forward to it. You know, I've never been anywhere near South America, so looking forward to the trip.
Yeah?
It's sort of very flat back and forth. Great, you know. Sort of like, well, I've got no response. And so the whole thing is this. Words are failing me.
Well, it's if you wanted to design a segment that subtracted the most amount of excitement and potential from an England football match, this is how to do it. It's underplayed.
Well, that he's
it's
rugby.
Undersold. Well, sorry. Well, any sort of any sport event.
Anything
then,
at all? Yeah.
Because we also see some. There's a David Seaman.
There's David.
A very brief David Seaman.
Yeah.
So they're trying to big up the fact that they've got a rugby match and an England match.
Yeah.
They're going to be on the same day.
Yeah.
In a couple of months' time, exclusive to Channel 5. But the whole presentation of this.
They've got nothing. They've just got nothing to show.
It's conceived to rob it of all possible significance.
Yeah. And it's as if they've been told, you can have 10 minutes. And we're not going to tell you when those 10 minutes are. We're just going to drop by with Phil. You're going to have to be ready to go there and then. That's the feeling of it, isn't it? It's a kind of, it's almost like a red carpet interview. These kind of opportunistic, quick stop and chat.
Yes.
It has all that.
Well, I've got one response to that.
We're not claiming that Five will improve your lifestyle. Winning the lottery might. But until you do, we've got a host of shows aimed at making the most out of life. Shows like Fame and Fortune.
Gorgeous.
Hot Property.
Only half a million.
The Great Garden Game.
So that's the name of a programme you'd make up at school.
This is another one, yeah.
If you had, like, right, in today's lesson, we're going to pretend that you work on a TV channel. What sort of... And you've got an...
So you've got to do a show for you. Show for mum and dad.
Show for... Yeah.
Great Garden Game. But the Great Garden Game, that did make me coo. Thinking, oh, what's that going to...
But we don't... We're not told, are we?
No.
Do we
get no... That's the only detail we get.
Do we see a 3-second clip of two people bending over?
In a garden. And it's the Great Garden Game. It's on, Ian. The Great Garden Game.
And if you want to know what's hot and what's not, well, that's where I come in. Because every weekday night at 7, myself and Jonathan Coleman will be keeping our ears to the ground, our eyes peeled and our fingers firmly on the pulse to bring you the latest, juiciest showbiz gossip that is exclusive.
This is the bit where we find out how Julia Bradbury is going to be deployed on Channel 5, and it's on a daily entertainment magazine show.
First ever on terrestrial television,
because BSB already had 31 West.
Yes,
but and this idea that it's something that I think channel commissioners get a bee in their bonnet about, and it's a once in a generation idea, because someone will come across and say we should do. Oh, people love showbiz.
They love these showbiz magazines as well. Let's try
put
and
it
do
on the telly.
A TV version.
Oh, people are going to flop to that.
They'll love it.
And then it comes. It's a massive flop. And then for another generation, we don't have to have one.
It's an unmentionable thing until enough people have forgotten about it, and then it's tried again, and then it fails.
Then it fails again. And so this one was called Exclusive, and it does that thing which is the worst thing I can't bear in a clips package. Someone has had access, probably in a press junket or a red carpet, and they'll say to a celeb,
they've been through all their questions.
Hi, Fred. Fred Harris at the end. Could you just say?
Yeah.
And they'll say that because you were there. You've asked them. They can't really go, I'm not going to do that.
Yes.
So you have this package whereby people saying...
Exclusive.
And you have people like Michael Palin.
Bob Hoskins.
And then very quickly, notice these kind of slipping Roland River on.
Exclusive.
It's a bit like now when people go, kind of celebrity journalists go on Twitter and say, oh, I've just had a lovely chatting to at Mark Gatiss. It's this kind of, look at my access.
That's all it is.
Tells you nothing more than that. I've met these people.
Yes.
Look, it's like taking a selfie. So it's the 1997 equivalent of taking a selfie with your celebrity interviewee who has to consent to that selfie because because you're there. It's a press thing. If they don't, that in itself might be a story. So they're hostages. They have to look down camera and say, exclusive.
It's obviously something you feel quite passionate about.
I'm very, very passionate about that. Now, the other thing that I feel passionate about is we get to the other heavily set gentleman who never made it out of the 1990s in terms of popular culture, which is Jonathan Jono Coleman.
Oh, of course. He's
people
a personality.
Love him. He's quirky. He's a little bit acerbic.
He's a little bit edgy. But might say something a little bit provocative.
And he's just a hoot.
What's he doing? What's,
who knows?
What programme is he on? Exclusive.
Exclusive. Oh, do you mean...
Is he one of the...
He's Julia's co-presenter. Weren't you paying attention to this?
I was too distracted by all the celebrities saying
exclusive. He is her co-presenter. Oh. So this idea that
we'll get... What a pairing there.
This kind of copper plate presenter in Julia. And then we'll get...
A pair of hands.
Let's get some... And then... She can work. So it's a bit like Chris and Gabby on Big Breakfast.
Yes.
He will rove and then she will, pull. And, Jonathan Coleman, has anyone thought of him since? Was this his last thing? It's like a drowning man. That's his last bit with his hand.
His final words and before he disappears with the waves.
From pop culture.
Exclusive!
So that's about it. Programmes we hope you'll want when you want them.
New shows, new faces, and a movie for you every night of the week.
That pretty much brings about the end of
Channel 5.
This opening night preview, or tee off, or I don't know what you would call it. Teaser.
Extended teaser.
Which ends on a kind of a suite of film clips.
Yes.
Again, with a lot of Highlander. Hot Shots Part Deux, I noticed, is in there. I also noticed there's The Big Man with Liam Neeson, which launched BSB's movie channel as well, if memory serves.
And then before they go, our hosts one more time say that they hope we're going to enjoy.
They're not making any promises. They're putting out there, it would be great if you enjoy it. No guarantees in any of this.
Reminded me of how in The Interceptor.
Yes.
Annabelle Croft would always say...
Hello, welcome to Interceptor, and what we hope will be another action-packed episode...
Not over-egging it,
Just saying, no, that would be too...
We're all coming together with the best of intentions. Maybe it's not going to turn out like that, but he's hoping.
Fingers crossed.
Ladies and gentlemen, children, cats and dogs, thank you very much for your time.
Yes, thank you. We hope you've enjoyed what you've seen, because this is Five.
Right, now it's my turn to show Graham my surprise programme from 1997.
Okay.
This is a programme where, again, it's immediately obvious what it is, both from what's on screen and from what you're hearing. So there's no element of surprise.
Okay.
Here we go.
Well, it's the National Lottery. Is it the National Lottery Breakdown? Is it the one where Bob has to fill?
No.
No, okay. Is it a Bob... Monkhouse?
Sadly, no.
It's not.
So who do you think is going to be
presenting? Noel.
No.
Emmanuel AD. Oh, Dale Winton. Of course it's Dale.
And there he is doing his trademark jump onto the set. Okay, well, we're now going to watch the rest of this edition of the National Lottery Live, and then we'll talk a bit more about it afterwards. Well, that was an edition of the National Lottery Live that was broadcast on BBC One on the 11th of October 1997. Mm. Now, a bit of context. By this point, the lottery had been going for about 3 years.
Right.
And so I think it was still a bit of a novelty at the time.
Yes, I think so.
And you can tell that, I think, quite strongly from this programme. There's a lot of talk about the amounts of money on offer.
Tonight's estimated prize fund is a sumptuous £26,800,000. And all of that boils down to a mouth-watering estimated jackpot prize tonight of £8.4 million.
There's a lot of attention paid to where the money's going. The good causes are mentioned.
Let me tell you, the inner city farmers received from the lottery £1,116,758. Sir, good to see you too, sir.
I think my initial impression from this programme, and possibly yours as well, is that it's a programme very much designed for expediency. And I remember thinking this at the time, and I'm sure it's not an original thing to say, that it's basically this is a 20-minute programme constructed around 30 seconds of interesting information.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, when you to expand that point, it's very notable how that when it gets to the point, when the draw happens,
yes,
show just ends.
Hope those numbers add up to a fortune for you, thanks to Sherry, Billy and Meggie.
That's right. There's no other reason for it to continue, of course, because its job has been done. Now, part of this was because, I think I'm right in saying that for a programme to be counted for ratings purposes, it had to be at least 50 minutes long. Mm. So rather than fold the lottery draw into another show or have it as a little bulletin, an entire format had to be created for its existence. And here we are with a show that is kind of, well, what is it? How would you describe, what's the genre of this show?
That's a very, very good question, because it has the trappings of a light entertainment show. Possibly, I mean, actually, there's something a little bit kind of Jim Davidson's Generation Game about the look of it.
Colour.
Well,
skin,
maybe the logo,
just the feel of it,
the
well.
Feel of it, that kind of sort of very 90s grandeur. The music's sort of like light entertainment current affairs. Yes. It has some import and gravitas, but it's fun.
It's built around a fanfare, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
And that helps to give the show some punctuation marks,
yes,
I think, in terms of the sound of it.
And it's great music.
Yeah, really, oh yeah, undeniably, that's one of the best things about it. But yeah, there's a bit of light entertainment, there's a bit of showbiz, there's a bit of a sort of a magazine-y feel. A bit of celebrity chat, a live musical guest. I mean, it's such a rather, it's such a half-hearted attempt to stitch together 20 minutes out of almost next to nothing.
I think maybe the difficulty it has, and but it's a difficulty that it sets itself, is it tries to find something cohesive in the idea of the lottery itself, as if,
yes,
this is a world with characters. It's almost a soap in itself. So we have Alan Dedicote commentates as every
the
ball appears
the ball, yes,
on the storyline that that ball has had thus far in, yes, this show.
In first out's number 18, last year, the Saturday, Stephanie Beecham joined us. 21st time as main ball and yet to be the bonus.
Just drawn together by this umbrella of lottery
money and people doing, well,
it's kind of lottery folk. It's a tale of everyday lottery folk.
Anyway, the whole thing begins with the sight of the host bounding onto the stage.
Roll up, roll up. It's a pound a ticket for the biggest entertainment show in town. Tonight, there's a cash mountain. Billy Ocean. Houses for a king and a queen of the street. Remember, money's the word on the star-studded National Lottery live. And here's the biggest star stud of them all, Dale Winton.
So already we're off on a rather unsavoury tone.
And also, he uses the phrase in that Alan Dedicote says money's the word. And the thing that struck me about that and watching the whole because often we have backdrops which are kind of gold and glittering coins showering from above.
Yeah.
Feels very vulgar now.
It
and
is,
in a way,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
I think this celebration and excitement around money and windfalls would be in quite poor taste in
absolutely
austerity Britain.
Now, why is Dale hosting this programme?
I think Dale probably is hosting it because he is one of those kind of go-anywhere hosts. So you could, it's a live show. And actually, I mean, there isn't anything that that makes it appear as if he's particularly had to ad-lib or stretch himself on this edition. But should something happen, Dale can go with it.
I think
he can spot a TV moment and follow it. And not everyone can do that.
I think he looks a bit nervous.
Do
even
you?
Even though he'd been doing this now for about a year or so.
Mm.
But I'm not entirely at ease whenever he's on the screen.
Well, he's always visibly
flustered.
Perspiring, isn't he? I think.
That's true, yes.
Which is true. But one has to say that, you know, his reach is impressive. You know, he was the quintessential students, ironically, like him.
Well,
mums like him for what he is. He works very slightly, I mean, no, this is... Is this an invidious comparison? But slightly Larry Grayson-esque.
Yeah,
there are levels.
That. There's a bit of the, yeah.
Then so. Also, when you were saying why Dale, isn't the lottery show, is kind of, it's one of those things that was useful for the BBC, where if they had acquired a big host,
yes,
it's somewhere to put them.
To park them, isn't
which
it?
Isn't,
yes,
a massive commitment, but it makes them very visible on a Saturday
That's
night.
That's true, yes. It's a good holding area
mm
for talent
mm
on the books.
Mm.
In fact, just a few months before this, he'd been the subject of a gotcha on Noel's house.
Wow, so he'd been anointed.
Which he'd certainly arrived.
Yes.
By that, yeah.
This is a wind-up, isn't it? This is!
What is?
No, Noel Edmonds, you've got me today, haven't you? Tell me you've got me. Please tell me it's you, because I've lost the car.
I think, yeah, I mean, well, let's reflect a bit about Dale's presentational style, because he tries to do a little bit of a stand-up routine at the beginning.
Yes.
If you think I'm looking all at sea tonight, you wouldn't be wrong. Terrible thing happened, because before I came onto the show tonight, I bumped into the Director General, and he told me that I had been the inspiration for that brand new big BBC Red Balloon thing. Have you seen it? I said, inspiration? How flattering. Is it because it's inventive, spectacular, and gets people talking? He said, no, Dale, it's because it's big, round, and full of hot air.
Now, I love this, because this really resonates with the... this is almost the last knockings of the idea of the BBC as a singular organisation. And so this idea that Dale's arrived at work, and he's walking down the corridor, who's that coming the other way?
It's the DG.
Because, you know, this could happen.
That's going to happen, because they all live there all the time.
They're all there together. And this idea that... so they have this little exchange about... This is the other thing that's great, is the new BBC Red Balloon iDents.
The hot air balloon.
Dale's getting that in. Yes. Another talking point.
And a bit of brand... a good bit of on-message branding.
Exactly. But the thing I like about the story in particular is when Dale does the usual, oh, is it because... It's edgy,
talented,
or whatever
yes.
he says. And the DG says, no, Dale. And I like the fact that he uses Dale's name. Because
well,
he knows
they're
Dale.
All on first name terms.
No, Dale.
And also, don't forget, Dale's one of those people who was never Winton. It was always Dale.
Dale.
And I mean, I suppose, well, I know that when the likes of Bob Monkhouse were doing it, because they alternated for a while, Monkhouse,
okay.
and imagine that, a combination, Monkhouse and Winton. Monkhouse would use this point to do a gag routine.
Yeah, yeah.
You see the pictures from France. Miles and miles of queuing lorry drivers. And the fellow who lives next door to me said, it's just like your house when you're away working, Bob. I thought, I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, so then we go into a sequence of items to get us really from... it's a very torturous way to get from A,
yeah.
which is the start of the show, to B,
yeah.
the lottery draw. But this journey has to take 20 minutes.
Yes.
And it goes through a sequence of completely pointless destinations.
And I like it that you say A to B rather than A to Z, because... Actually, everything that comes after A will have to be a subclause of A, because there
yes.
is no, there's no, there's
nothing.
Nothing
else is of nothing else is of equal stature
no.
to the draw.
No.
The draw is the only important thing in the programme.
That's what we're here for.
Yes. So first of all, we have this business with the animals, which you mentioned.
So this is Sherry Hewson's. Almost apropos of nothing, she's left Coronation Street. She has a charity. It's an animal charity. Some animals come on that aren't from
her
animal
charity.
I've got a sanctuary of my own, which is only foals and horses, and that's an Oswald Twistle, but these aren't from there. But...
They talk then about the money that the lottery has put into this animal charity.
I just want to say how wonderful the lottery has been here, our sweetheart, because they have brought together a lot. I'm not quite sure how much money. Dale will tell you in a minute.
When Sherry's describing it, you can see she has only the vaguest grasp on what the charity is
yes.
for and what the money has done for it.
Then there's a bit of, we see the obligatory stuff about the balls being loaded into the machine. And
yes.
There you see the drawmaster slotting his rubber balls into the number cruncher. Independent adjudicator Sean Fleet is ensuring he makes a darned good job of it.
I mean, this has always been a thing, isn't it? With this, a lot of emphasis placed on the mechanics of the lottery.
Well, because they have so little else to do, they have to sort of fetishise it, don't they? And
that's
get
what
into
it is.
All the
yes.
And I think it's sort of quite pleasing. I think that it's kind of fun to see the machines, isn't it?
Well, balls. They're full of flashing lights and they're moving around a bit, so at least they look visually interesting.
Yes.
However, then we come to the first real clunker of the show, which is the first of a little filmed report.
Yes.
Now, if money were no object, we'd all probably buy our own dream house. But David Sullivan, the chairman of the Birmingham City Football Club and the owner of the sport newspaper, couldn't find his dream house, so he decided to have it built. And it just so happens that one of our past jackpot winners needed some advice.
But already you're thinking, well, who gives a shit? This guy has won. In the week that we were all hoping it was going to be us.
We've been reminded here of someone who is lucked out.
And of our own failure. So I feel like those people, when you win it, you
should retire from public view.
You leave the narrative of
yes.
the lottery show. It's all about who hasn't won it and that it could be you.
Yes, you should never rub people's faces in the fact that you have won it, because you've become one of them. You're not one of us anymore.
Yes.
But what makes this even worse for me is that the person who owns the house he goes to visit is a pornographer. It's David Sullivan, the person who launched all the strip clubs and the pornographic magazine in the 70s. And here he is. What, of all the people they could have picked, millionaires with luxury houses, they visit a pornographer. And who allowed this piece of report to be make it to air?
And this man, so Carl, then they kind of pad around this house. Oh, it's very garish.
It's
very
awful,
crassly.
Tacky.
It's got 14 bedrooms. My bedroom's got two bathrooms. Got a pink bathroom for her and a white bathroom for me with a four-seater jacuzzi.
Sort of a faux Greco-Roman.
There's no taste on evidence whatsoever.
This kind of like fake marbling and these kind of gold-plated statues.
There's a fountain,
jacuzzis.
An enormous snooker table.
And this weird kind of one-upmanship. Lovely. Chat.
And how many square foot is that, Carl?
I believe the last count was about 7,000 square foot, so, but I've still got no idea on how big that is yet.
Well, this, nothing is, in comparison. This is about 25,000 square feet, but no, and it cost about 6 million about 6 years ago, but the difference is mine's on 4 stories, this is on 2, so realistically, this will be about half the size of mine.
I think the nadir of this segment is reached, however, when the two have a discussion about how to maintain an indoor swimming pool.
The big problem with pools, you must get very good air conditioning. Otherwise, you see, it's all steamed up and the condensation damages your house.
We hear about the cost, the electricity bill and the chemicals needed to keep the water. I mean, for God's sake, how this ever... Well, I don't know, maybe something else fell through, or once they'd committed to doing this report or this piece of film, they had to run it.
It's just a paucity of ideas. I think that's what it must be. This weird idea that these are characters that we invest in. So the fact this guy's won the lottery and now he's doing pieces to camera, and you sort of think, actually, get out of my TV. Yes. You're now getting this extra treat on top of the big life-changing treat you've already had.
Yeah. Next up, another bit of filler. It's the musical guest.
Billy Ocean, isn't it?
Yes.
What do you think? What do you think the guest booker said to guests, and also what do you think you feel as a guest coming on to do? Billy Ocean's been around a long time, so do you think it's just the same old shit? You know, oh, it's another show. I don't really quite understand what it's about.
I think there's probably some of that. It's I'm doing the circuit. I'm doing the promotional round. Oh, it's the lottery. I might as well do that. It's Saturday night.
Yeah, it gets a lot
of prime
viewers.
Time.
Suddenly. Life has new meaning to me.
I'm a bit nearer towards the draw than the previous item, so there might be a few more people have switched on early.
Do you think that's a negotiation?
I'm sure
point,
it is, yeah. Now, I'll do it, but as long as I can be 5 minutes max before the draw. But, I mean, it's not even the support. There's another thing to come before we
yes,
get to the draw.
Yes, there is, yeah.
But if we have to sit through 4 minutes of, frankly,
but he's singing
dirge.
Suddenly, which is one of his lower pace kind of songs. It's not really a Saturday night song. It's a real kind of
It subtracts
dropping.
All enthusiasm and energy from proceeding. But then you think, good God, the song's out of the way. Maybe it's the draw. No.
Do you know, seeing Carl Crompton look around David Sullivan's house earlier got me dreaming.
There's still more.
Where would I want to live if I really did win the jackpot?
Because now we're off to New York.
I cast my net far and wide because I'd heard there was the most fabulous pad for sale in New York.
Almost apropos of nothing.
There's no reason for
this. It's so perfunctory.
And even worse, it's him. Dale has gone to New York.
You know, if you want to live in Manhattan, the apartment has to be the ultimate status symbol.
It's another luxury residence with for God's sake, and we don't know who, we're not told who it is initially.
Well,
but
no,
we're
I
shown you
it.
I didn't guess who it was, but you did straight away, and we're shown this extremely opulent place.
You've even got Imelda Marcos as a neighbor.
I mean, it's
gold ceilings.
It's obviously the property not of a minute of a billionaire.
Yes.
And it's in New York. I don't know why Dale's there. There's no explanation given as to why he's here or why he's been let in. He just has a nose around. He shows us these awful tacky, gaudy furnishings. And then at the end, he says casually,
the price, $20 million. The seller, Donald Trump.
But even then, once that's finished, we're still not at the draw because then we have to go to the person who Dale describes as his favourite bit of Lotty Totty.
Venus and Pluto ignite love for fire signs.
But yeah, here comes Mystic Meg sitting in her boudoir.
Yes.
With all these gallons of
it's dry ice.
Dry
I
ice.
Think there must be about five different rigs of dry
all
ice.
All over her.
Except, I mean, that's very well choreographed because her face is never occluded,
that's,
is it?
Yes.
And that could
yes.
have gone badly wrong. So that might, they, you know, they must have wind machines and things going as well, to direct the dry ice around.
This is
her
a
face.
Format which they do every week, so it's tried and tested. Mm. Nothing ever changes in this format. And she sits there and spouts this nonsense about a ticket kept in a jewel box and stablemakers.
That's right.
Stablemakers and a casino will be celebrating too.
But the thing that's good about her, I think she is a good
really?
Find for television because she's so counterintuitive to television. Her pronunciation even is odd.
Just because she's an eccentric, she's not cut from the same cloth.
No, she's like Margarita Prakatella.
Thank you for everybody to be here for El Gorgeous, Clive Yang, and this beautiful man.
Or something like that. This kind of guyless comes on, is doing their thing, and it's almost completely
they don't care
separate.
About the genre. Or
no,
they just do their bit as they would do it anywhere else.
Yes.
I suppose. And it only lasts about 30 seconds.
Yes.
Then she disappears.
And that's it. And they don't overextend her. She's never made to stand up, for example. She's
No, that's
she
true. She never moves.
So she never... They don't break that by sort of trying to develop her and move her on or make her more integral.
The inference is that's where she lives.
Yes. And we're just popping by to see her.
You know, she never leaves that part of the studio. Then finally...
Draw time's pressing.
Finally... Wait.
Please welcome back Sherry Hewson.
There's another bit of chat with Sherry.
Sherry,
where she goes
Sherry
on
pops
about
back on for some other chat.
She talks about, oh dear.
Listen, I mean, you've left the street
yes.
after 6 years.
And she talks about all the new... This is, unfortunately, this is always a bad thing where an actor who's just left a big show, but then she says all these things that she's got coming up.
Yes. Well, like there's that. A sitcom coming next year. I'm in Chichester for Christmas, and then just you. I'm going to
we'll work
with
together.
You.
There wasn't a sitcom next year. There was no sitcom starring Sherry Hewson. Anyway, then we finally get to the draw, which, of course, is the bit where everyone is actually interested in. And I mean, we don't need to go through it. Everyone knows what happens.
Yes.
It's all a big thing with the machine and then balls come out.
I like the business where she's getting to press the red button, which never really became like a badge of honour for personalities. You know, like appearing in The Bill or in Doctor Who was a thing that actors want to do. I don't think it ever was, yes, I did the...
I pushed the button on the lottery.
Who do I talk to push the...
I suppose,
and then she also has to, you can see her kind of psyching herself up to give some kind of little maxim or
aphorism. She has a bon mot to say.
May all your dreams come true!
And then the draw takes place, and I suppose it's still quite quaint to hear... Alan Dedicote give all this factual information
yes.
about the number of times.
As if it means
this
anything.
Ball. Of course, it means
each
nothing
ball
at
has
all.
Its own intelligence and life.
Next out is 17, here the Wednesday before last, when Old Vords pressed the blue button for us. 29th lottery appearance.
It's the same premise behind all that spiel on Deal or No Deal
yeah.
about, oh, it's box number thing, it's the third time it's been in this. But of course, it means absolutely nothing.
Well, let me stop you there. What do you think was the system for Alan to have these stats? It must be a computerised program.
Down. Yeah,
yeah, but it must be popping things up because he's saying it instantly, isn't he? As the ball is rolling down,
oh, do you think
he has this information?
It's on a screen.
So he must have a screen.
Oh, I thought he had
balls.
It all on bits of paper. And
so do you think he's like licking his
39,
thumb?
That's the... <yeah. laughs> No, you're right, that would make sense.
Or otherwise it's a kind of a Sherlock Holmes mind
it's
palace
very,
of
very,
ball numbers and stats.
Yeah, he's very slick, to be fair. And then, as you said before, once the balls are out, there's no reason for the programme to continue, and so it just finishes, stops, right there.
Except everyone comes out on stage.
Oh, of course,
away,
yes.
Which is...
So we have Billy Ocean, Mystic, what a lineup. Mystic Meg,
in
Billy
her,
Ocean.
Her lone, actually, so her, she does deviate
she does,
from a thing
that's
there. She's allowed
that's
on
the
her feet
one
then.
Time when she leaves her deck.
She's allowed to stand.
As a format in itself, at this point in time, do you think... It kind of gets away with it. Do you think it does its job?
Well, I suppose the difficulty of watching it now is that you're not watching it with the sense of having bought a ticket. And I think actually you can't really underestimate how much that adds to it. So this whole idea of here we are, maybe your life is going to change in the next 20 minutes.
Yes, before the end of this programme, yeah. You might have become a millionaire.
Yeah, and so the idea of delaying that gratification, there is some fun in
it. It's cruel,
that.
Though, isn't
it's
it?
It's cruel, but there's also fun. You're just like, come on.
Get to the draw.
Yeah, and maybe you are thinking, well, gosh, I could be Carl Crompton quite soon and going to meet a pornographer to talk about my new house. And... You You've been listening to a 1997 themed edition of what we just watched from TV Cream, in which we watched the launch of Channel 5 from the 30th of March
and an edition of the National Lottery Live from the 11th of October.
Goodbye.
Bye.